Good evening, and welcome to this evening's program of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and on our YouTube channel. I'm Joseph Fink, the President Emeritus of Dominican University in Marin County, and the former chairman of the Board of Governors of the Commonwealth Club. More importantly, I'm the moderator for this evening. It's now my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco, Speaker of the Assembly, California, noted political commentator on national news. And he's here to give us this evening his annual talk on the state of national, regional, and local politics. It's hard to really give an introduction for Willie because he was a fabulous mayor in San Francisco, a legendary speaker of the California State Assembly, and widely regarded as one of the most influential African-American politicians of the late 20th century. His influence carries on today, nationally, locally, and within the state. He's been at the center of California politics, government, civic life for over five decades. Today, he heads the Willie L. Brown Jr. Institute on Politics and Public Service, where he shares his knowledge and skills with a new generation of California leaders. He also writes a column for the San Francisco Chronicle and appears on a regular basis on national news television programs. Ladies and gentlemen, Willie Brown.
Dr. Fink, thank you very much for that very kind introduction. It is now, how many years, I suppose, 12, 13, 14?
13.
13 years since we've been doing this. And for those of you who obviously wonder aloud about public speakers, no, I've not received Hillary Clinton's money. I am, of course, always delighted to be in the presence of people connected with the Commonwealth Club. The activities of the Commonwealth Club are just awesome. I recall when Al Gore decided to come out of retirement after losing the election in 2000, and he called me up and said that that I think it would be okay for him to appear at the Commonwealth Club. I said, yes, if they will have you. And sure enough, they did, and it was one of the largest crowds. As a matter of fact, they moved it, I think, to either the Fairmont or one of the hotels in order to accommodate the former vice president, and they launched his career for awards, the Grammys and the Oscars and a few others, and then he's disappeared again. And so if and when he calls me next, I hope the Commonwealth Club's new home will be available for his presence down on the waterfront right next to my home. My law office is on the top floor of the building next door, and I have been avoiding going to work for the last two or three months. A building for the Commonwealth Club is a very noisy activity, and I don't want to have a negative attitude about a new neighbor, so I have avoided suffering. Although my staff is suffering mightily. As a result, I've shifted my base to my home. And some of my staff people are here, and they always show up because it forces me not to do situational speeches and responses to questions because they know the truth. And so it's always a challenge. Can you imagine if Trump had anybody connected with his operation that could put the fear of God in him for truth-telling purposes, he probably couldn't make a speech. He'd be so confused about what the truth really is. Politics in America this year is unlike politics has ever been in America. I've been around a long time, and I've listened to some of everything. I've gone back call my friends from all around the nation, all the network of people that I've interacted with to the extent that I could find them, and each of them are asking me, what's going on? It's amazing how almost nobody understands exactly where this guy is coming from. He had 16 opponents in the primary, and in a short 12-week period from the time of the first vote in that godforsaken place that every 4 years becomes election central for 5 minutes. And nobody ever remembers that Iowa was where it all started. We don't even mention it. It's not, I don't think the people who do postal delivers to that state now, because there's no reason why they should. There's nothing that happens to that state. But for a period of time, you really do have them there. And of course, it was just 12, 13 weeks ago that all this started. And there was at that time, I loved it. I absolutely loved the fact that they had two tiers. They had an adult table and a children's table. And they assigned people to the respective tables based on what they say were their numbers. And it was fun watching them scramble. And Trump, of course, was the centerpiece. At each one of the occasions, they put the one with the best numbers right in the center, and the ones with the worst numbers, they put them on the ends. And he, of course, kept making fun of the people on the end. And he kept coming up with names for everybody. And everybody else was serious. Everybody else had done their homework. They'd written their term paper, and they had digested their term paper, and they were ready to deliver it. They'd been given a prompt method by which to respond to questions based upon whatever the words were. I mean, they were really prepared. And Trump, of course, was there to do what he does best, entertain. And you can entertain when you have no need for substance. You have no need for positions or anything of that nature. You have no understanding of the Constitution. As a matter of fact, you don't even appreciate that there is a Constitution. And so you aren't limited by whatever the definitions of the authority and the power would be. You have no idea where Poland is. You just don't, you have no reference whatsoever to anything international. You probably don't even have a passport. And he was really into it. And he confused them all. All 16 of them, even including the ones not in the same room with him, were confused. They were all angling on him. He also evidenced a great disrespect for the press. Now, that offended me, because, you know, I'm pseudo-press. I don't think the press claims me. But I do have a column, and it's rated better than any of theirs. And so, as a result of that, I claim I am the press. I'm a part of the press. But he really was awful to the press. He would pick on somebody that he knew most of us would agree with that they were not very good, and he would let us know they were not very good, and he was really demeaning to them, but entertaining in his demeaning. And he would literally change his view and his mind on every angle. He did that to all of them. The ones that he didn't insult were the ones that dropped out and endorsed him immediately. The gentleman from New Jersey, he never said a word. He ignored the governor of New Jersey full time. And it may have been they had that arrangement to begin with. I wouldn't put it past Trump to have said to Ben Casey and to Chris Christie, you guys, you know, if your numbers aren't good and you're about to split, I won't bother with you, but I'll pick you up the day you come endorse me. And apparently the arrangement's been done, and one of them is his transition leader, and the other one is a guy searching for his vice president. I called Ben Carson, who appeared here at the Commonwealth Club, and I said, listen, if you're the chair of the search committee, you understand that that means you're not eligible to be. That's a smart move on his part. And I called Christie and told him the same thing. You're head of the transition committee. You can't assign yourself to any of the key positions in the administration. So you got to watch Trump. He's pretty slick. He still has all those things to give away for whatever purpose. And he's a deal maker. And he will keep doing exactly that. And anybody who rises to the occasion to try to respond to his insults or his bizarre conduct, you're going to be hurt. You'll spend full time demeaning yourself. It is like having, a urine contest with a skunk. you're bound to show up. You're bound to show up in a way that there's no way you're going to get away from being easily identified as a new skunk as a result of that. And so everybody who's challenged him have ended up the same way. I love the way he referred to Lil Marco. I mean, it was just totally destructive. And then in Lion Ted, I mean, that Ted guy is kind of scary. But he, but everybody else he destroyed in one fashion or another, or he co-opted in one fashion or another. And every one of us, every single solitary one of us, when he said low energy, we all knew exactly of whom he was speaking. And that just stuck with him. And then when he insulted all the women in America, so they say, or some people say, when he says, Fiorina, that face. I mean, everybody, oh, well, yeah, I do know about that face. I've looked at that face, and there are some issues. But I don't think you can say it, but he did. And it was just absolutely horrible the way in which he trashed the entire operation. He reversed the process involving the Republican Party, and now they're all confused. They're totally and completely confused. They don't know where they are because, you see, he was smart. He didn't say at the first time that he would support the nominee. And then when he realized the absence of quality among them and that he could possibly get the nomination, he immediately announced, oh, yes, I will support the nominee because I'm going to be the nominee. And that's an easy thing to do. And now the Republican Party is totally and completely confused. They are totally and completely confused. And Trump obviously is prepared to proceed without them. He's announcing that he is not into unity unless it's on his terms and his conditions. And they're all messing around, being responsive. Now he's focused on Hillary, and he is trying his best to rile her. So far, she's been really smart and really clever. She's totally ignored him. And nothing can destroy an egomaniac more than being ignored. I was always upset when somebody ignored me. And so I know what the potential is. I know exactly what the potential is for being ignored. And Trump is going to flip out if she continuously ignores him. And particularly if she ignores him and lets Elizabeth go after him. And Elizabeth is really cool. I don't think he can find her anywhere. I don't think he has ever seen her. All he knows is that when he tweets, she tweets back. And her tweets back are usually better than his tweets. And I think if he knew her well enough, he'd probably hire her as a writer for him just to neutralize her efforts. But if Hillary uses her talent correctly, that'll be where it is. On the other hand, Trump could very easily look around and decide the only way that he can move in the fall is to line up Bernie as his running mate. Can you imagine if you had Trump and Bernie as a running mate? Yeah, and you understand that Bernie is available. He's an independent, or he is not a Democrat, or hasn't been a Democrat. He's running a Democratic primary, and he's going to lose it fairly soon. I wish he'd lose it sooner than that so we could get around to an early confrontation between the two real candidates, Trump and Clinton, but Bernie is around and he's carrying on. He was over in Oakland and Stockton and Sacramento. You know you're in trouble if that's your... Winners don't go there. Winners come here, Silicon Valley, and Los Angeles. They don't go Oakland, Sacramento, and Stockton. Are you kidding me? What are you looking for, Bernie? But nevertheless, Bernie will be vanquished fairly soon. Hillary is about 175 votes away from having acknowledgement that she's gotten the number required for the Democratic nomination. She's ignoring Bernie also, just like she's ignoring Trump, and she's got to keep doing that. She also has to, I think, let the microphone elevate her voice rather than her elevating her voice, because as she elevates her voice, it really turns you off, and she really needs to slow down and let them pump up the sound, and she needs to even get to the point where she's talking as a grandmother to her granddaughter, and we're all just listening in. And if she does that, I think we would begin to form a love with her, a love which many of us do not now have. Clearly, she is the best qualified candidate to be the president. She knows everything about international affairs. She has a grasp on knowledge that has been honed over the years and years and years of public service and public involvement. And I think we'll have our first woman president, and I hope she takes the mayor of probably the city of San Antonio, who is now the HUD secretary, and make him her running mate. And when she does that, she'll have a team that I think we can all, or I can all, and you can all, hopefully, be blessed with, and America will be better off with our own version of Margaret Thatcher and Miss Merkel and all those other ladies that are running the world. And Hillary will be a part of that team. Now, that's the national picture at the moment. However, there's another part. There's another part of the national picture which is not on the radar. Nobody is paying attention to what's happening with the U.S. Senate. But you're going to watch all the senators who are at risk on the Republican side are going to be trying to figure out how they can survive. And right now, Democrats only need a net of 5. Democrats have 44, and they're 2 independents. That makes 46, and 5 switches out of the 10 that are in play and at risk. The only one that we have we could possibly lose is the seat that Reed is leaving in Nevada, by my assessment. But we can win in Florida. It's a Republican seat. All these are Republican seats. We can win in Florida. We can win in Pennsylvania. We can win in Illinois. We can win in Ohio. We can win in New Hampshire. We can win in Wisconsin. We have just a whole collection of them. We might even be able to take John McCain out in Arizona. And not because he's not, you know, he was described by and offended, by the way, by Trump. When Trump said, why do we celebrate and canonize somebody who just got captured? What's that all about? And lo and behold, he generated a whole nasty response. Just think, if Kerry had been smart enough to figure out how to get away from that shrimp boat, we'd have Kerry as the president. But Kerry wasn't smart like that. Trump was, and Trump is. And no one has referred and left McCain out there by himself. And McCain hasn't been smart enough to quickly embrace Trump and say, you know, you're forgiven, you're my son, you didn't know what you were doing at that moment, or you were on something, or got some other means by which to do what we politicians do. We do that. We accommodate very quickly when it's in our best interest. Well, you know, McCain may have waited too long because we got the chance of taking his seat as well. But we only need to get 5. We only need to net 5 to have 51. And when we do that, Schumer out of New York will be the new leader of the Senate, and Democrats will be better off, and President Clinton will be better off with the head of the Senate. Nancy Pelosi needs 30, net 30. That's a huge figure to get to 218. We had a bad season for about 2 years, 2 cycles, and it was really awful, but Trump is helping us mightily. The leader of the House is totally and completely confused beyond belief, Ryan, on what he should do, because he's aware that one of the Senate seats they may lose is in his state, in Wisconsin. They may lose that seat to a Democrat. That's how strong the Democrats have become in that state for electing people to public office, and that'll be a good thing because Wisconsin should never have left the Democratic side of the aisle with that guy Scott Walker. He was the first of the 16 to bail out, and they really must have had something on him because he didn't even show up to be interviewed to say hello, and so they really must have had something on him, but he got out immediately. I mean, like, overnight. And so it is possible that we could find ourselves being fortunate enough to replace Ryan. And he needs to be replaced. I don't like the ties that he wears. Have you seen those? They're worse than Trump's ties. As a matter of fact, they look like they were given to him by Trump. They're so bad. They're just so bad. And I hope we are able to replace him as Speaker with Nancy Pelosi. And if we do that, we'll be back on track to implement all of Bernie's recommendations. Now, in the state of California, there is a Senate seat that is going to be won by the former district attorney of San Francisco, now the attorney general of the state of California, although those debates, they've had two debates, and you're talking about something to put you to sleep. It's almost like a prescription drug that you use to go to sleep on, watching the debate of our U.S. Senate candidates. They stir up absolutely nothing. I think I'm the last, I'm probably the only person that actually watches the entire debate, because I'm hoping at some point there'll be something I can quote. So far, I'm 0 for 2. I've watched two, and they do nothing. But Kamala Harris is going to win that race to replace Barbara Boxer, and that is going to be a good thing for the state of California, because we'll still have two female senators representing us in this state. And then, of course, on the other hand, there's no other statewide contest that is generating any real interest. There are a number of congressional races that are generating interest, but they're internecine warfare, because in this state, we've gotten to the point now where all the runoffs are between two Democrats. Apparently, there are no Republicans who can ever qualify in the top four in any contest in the state, and that's a good thing. And the results are that we now are having Democrats versus Democrat in the so-called runoff. That's the way it's going to be in the Senate race, and it will be Sanchez versus Harris, and Harris will win that contest. Democrats and the Republicans are going to be really confused. You got a black woman and a Latino woman, and both Democrats. What the hell are Republicans going to do? Write in somebody's name under those circumstances? They certainly not going to be voting for either one of those women. Democrats will make the decision, and Kamala Harris will win it. In on those local contests, I am predicting that the AARP candidate in San Jose will win that and hold on to his congressional seat. That's the only one that seems to be in play in Northern California. The rest of the seats are pretty solid, and our 53-person delegation, except for the two or three that are retiring. Sam Farr is retiring. Leon Panetta's son will be the candidate down in from, and he'll have his father's old seat. And Leon, of course, had those two cabinet-level positions, or three, actually, cabinet-level positions for the time he served in government. His son is running. He's going to win the seat that Sam Farr now has, and the person who is going to run down in down in Southern California in the open seat where Raubacher is retiring, he tells me that it won't matter. It'll be somebody like him, which means not so good. But nevertheless, it will be a Republican who will win that seat. And then on the local level, for state contest purposes, it is a war between a fellow named Scott Weiner, very tall, who's lovingly referred to as a giraffe. And then there is the other is Jane Kim, who said to someone when they asked her about the streets of San Francisco, and they were complaining about what happens on the streets of San Francisco. She says, "You obviously do not enjoy the urban experience." And so it should be an interesting contest between Kim and Weiner for a state Senate seat. And the state Senate, from San Francisco's perspective, doesn't matter anymore. We don't seem to be able to gain any power. It's a seat that Mark Leno has abandoned, and not since we had Burton in charge of the state Senate, and we had Leo McCarthy and yours truly in charge of the state assembly. We really have not been a terribly impressive group of people representing San Francisco, and no matter which one of those two people win, it will be the status quo. It will still be not an impressive delegation representing our city, unfortunately. Hopefully, at some point, they will rise to begin to develop some influence. On the local level, it's an interesting little contest going on. There's something called the Democratic County Central Committee, the DCCC. And suddenly, it is in play. And it's in play for only one reason. It's the only place you can take contributions of any sort from anybody under any circumstances and do with them as you please. And these politicians know how to do that. They become experts at that. They know that there's a cap if they're running for the Board of Supervisors. It's $500. That's all you can give them. And everybody gives them the $500 and asks them not to call them again. And it's a mutual relationship. But in the DCCC, you can give them any amount of money. And they are generating more money than they've ever generated for any supervisorial seat. It's just absolutely amazing that you'd have that difference. You would think that any election in San Francisco ought to be kept the same way for contribution purposes. But that's not the way we work out at City Hall. We've managed to do it in such a way that the DCCC has become a feed-in frenzy ground, because you can then spend that money to help elect people who are of your same party without anybody questioning your expenditures. And it's called the independent expenditure operation. And you don't even have to tell who gave you the money to do it for that purpose. And it's just kind of a good way to go. And so suddenly you have all these named individuals running. They're running at teams. Aaron Peskin has his team, which he denies is his team. And Ed Lee has his team, which he denies is his team. It's interesting. They both have all these people running. And every name you've ever heard of in politics, except Art Agnos, Willie Brown, and Frank Jordan, are running this time and on one of those teams. It's amazing. And they're running on one of those teams. DCCC pays nothing. DCCC has zero power except to collect money and spend money for campaign purposes. And that's an important thing. And it's also an interesting new phenomenon that's going to take place in this city, and that is people who have been on the Board of Supervisors are going to stay off for one term and go back, just as Peskin did. And so suddenly you're going to have the perpetuation of the same concept of people from Jurassic Park participating in public policy making and not inviting any newcomers or any new ideas or any new creativity. And clearly, creativity is desperately needed. The hunger strikers are generating the interest in creativity. And there are others who are doing similar kind of things. San Francisco State in the Ethnic Studies Department, you got a hunger strike going on out there. All these people on these hunger strikes, you know, what the hell, are they run out of money? And they, you know, we got, you know, don't we have Meals on Wheels or something that could really help them out if they were hungry? It should. Nevertheless, we do have a confrontation going on. And interestingly enough, it's around one guy who has done absolutely nothing, literally nothing. Greg Sir is being held up as who ought to have to walk the plank. There's always somebody designated to walk the plank. And politicians find a way to make sure you walk the plank. Well, these hunger strike people have decided that all the bad cops, and there are bad cops when you got 2,000 police people, mostly are just high school graduates, you really are stuck with, absence of quality in every one of them. You can't have 100% quality in that group. Somebody's going to screw up. And obviously, number of them have screwed up. And obviously, there are a number of politicians taking advantage of the opportunity to demonstrate that they've screwed up. And poor Greg Sir is being held up as the cornerstone of all of their activities. You would think that Greg Sir ordered somebody to shoot somebody, or Greg Sir ordered somebody to use their computer to vilify somebody, racially speaking. All those are things, and they're asking him to walk the plank. And Mayor Lee, of course, is firmly of the opinion that Greg Sir should not walk the plank. He hasn't done anything to walk the plank. Clearly, if you do something that's inconsistent with rules and regulations, you ought to have to be held accountable for it. But there isn't any reason why you ought to be designated as the hit piece for what a total system may evidence itself as presenting problems. Obviously, that system needs to be addressed. The mayor is trying to address it, but the audience is not there to listen to that address. And I don't know what's going to ultimately happen, because every day there's a new revelation of somebody doing something, and it's in the police department. And then we have the ex-police chief, who clearly didn't get along with the department when he was the chief. And now that he's no longer the chief and he has the law enforcement responsibility, he is delighted to be being the critic. And he is almost a better critic of the police department than the public defender. Ordinarily, the public defender is the number one critic of the police department, because he's the lawyer for people who can't afford me or other people like me as for their defense. And in that regard, he represents them. And if you're in a war with what you represent your clients in criminal matters, you've got to do your best to discredit the opposition, because it's clear you're not going to be able to enhance your client. Your client may very well be guilty of sin. I never asked my client whether or not they were innocent or guilty. I never really wanted to know. I'd do a much better job if I didn't know that they actually did it. And so you don't ask them. Well, the public defender has the role of being able to do that, and so he is the number one critic. In our town, it is not. The district attorney now is the number one critic, because I suspect that so many of those police officers that were under his command must have slighted him somehow, offended him, or did something that he couldn't control at that time. Now that he can indict them, he is prepared to do that with enthusiasm. And the ones that he ain't prepared to indict, he's prepared to investigate. And that makes for an interesting city. I'm really pleased that I'm not the mayor. Thank you.
Our thanks to Willie Brown, former mayor of San Francisco and national political commentator, for his remarks this evening. It's now time to turn to the audience and hear some of the questions that they're interested in. Most of the questions have had to do with national politics, but there are some state and local issues that people would like to address. By the way, Willie, when we began this 13 years ago, we initially did it at the Commonwealth Club offices on Market Street, and soon we'll be on the Embarcadero. But today, here we are in the old Press Club building, where the Press Club bar used to be, and here we are, drinking water.
And if you remember, in the old Press Club, they had a black cat, not me. They had a black cat, and anything you said behind that black cat could not be published. You remember
right.
that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. The only time I tell the truth.
Let's start with a little bit of local politics. How would you grade? That is water for you, isn't it? Okay. How would you grade Ed Lee?
It's the color that I drink.
Okay.
Vodka.
Okay. How would you grade Ed Lee so far?
Well, Ed Lee's what do they call it in college, A, B, C, D, E, unfinished. What's the one that's on?
Incomplete.
Incomplete. He's incomplete at the moment, and he's incomplete because Ed Lee is such a decent, nice person. He is. He does not like to roll in and assassinate and eliminate. At some point, he's going to have to start doing that, and when he does, he will be disliked by some of the persons who run the various departments because he'll have to hold them accountable. And since he can't run for re-election, I hope he gets that spirit soon and he will complete his task as the mayor of the city. He had the best ratings of any of us who served in that capacity. Last night, I was advised by the people who do the snap polling. He's at 28%
wow.
in terms of acceptance. And that's really unfair because Ed Lee is better than the 28%. And he's better. He's as good as most of us who ever held a job.
Well, there are a few people going around town now trying to raise money for the possibility of running for mayor in the future. And what do you think the chances are for Mr. Peskin to get back into a leadership position?
Aaron will, I think, be a player in San Francisco for the next several years. He's just that smart. He's just that dedicated. He's got a lot of time on his hands. He has no children. He's got a working wife, and he's smart in his own, and he's crafty and loves politics. And understands land use almost as well as Karen or some of the other people who are in the land use management business. And in that regard, that's that's ground central, or ground zero for San Francisco. That's where the politics are played. So Peskin is going to be around for a long time. The interesting thing, though, is that there would be no Peskin if Ed Lee had accepted Rose Pack's advice and appointed Cindy Wu. There would have been no Peskin. Can you imagine a town without Peskin?
One more local issue question, and it's the perennial one. Is there anything that can be done about homelessness, or should we just accept the fact that it's going to be here with us forever, no matter how much money we spend?
I think you have to accept the fact that homelessness is incurable by any single city. It is an issue that is far beyond the boundaries of any city. It may be even beyond the boundaries of any state. It's beyond the limits of whatever the authority is to manage the lives of people without their consent, and it therefore very difficult. And no matter how many resources you put out there, if you can't marshal those resources and have the people you're trying to benefit agree with and be directed by, or you're going to have to just simply deal with it in the fashion it's currently being dealt with.
Okay. Well, let's move to state politics for a little bit. It's a while until the next gubernatorial election, but the current governor, Jerry Brown, has he built any type of legacy yet as a result of his service as governor this time around?
Well, I think Jerry is probably the number one politician, the number one public policy figure. He has more influence on practically everything at the state level and the local level that's done in the state of California. His announcements and his decisions, and most of them are single. He has almost nobody that he consults with in the halls of the legislature to do whatever he wishes to do. He controls the money, the budget, in every way. He controls the short-range performance and the long-range performance. I think that when he leaves, he will have to share the memory and the recollection of the Browns as a clan, not just one single person, because you can't point to anything like you could with his father. His father, system of higher education, the highway system in the state of California. His father was almost single-handedly responsible for those two things. And then you think about the people who followed him, Reagan, Duke Majan, and Bush, Reagan, Duke Majan, and Wilson, so much like Bush. Neither of them, you can recall, anything as significant as Jerry's father. And Jerry's sister was around for a while. You can't recall any significant thing that she did. So I think the Brown family will be remembered as a group, and Jerry will be remembered probably having served more time than any one of the other Browns.
All right, he's had a significant impact and control in many ways of the legislature. A few years ago, you said you were opposed to term limits. Is that still your position today?
It's still my position. I think term limits in any elective process is wrong. I think there are some people who should not have one term. And I think there are other people who ought to have as many terms as they earn based on their performance. I can assure you that I'd still be Speaker of the California State Assembly without term limits. I never would have been the mayor of San Francisco. I'd still be up there giving Jerry Brown a bad time in terms of the shared leadership for the state, because I was never ambitious enough to want to go some other place. I only came back to run for mayor because term limits at the state level pushed me out, and I only left the mayorship because of term limits. I'd still be mayor of San Francisco without term limits. There's no way you'd have Newsom anywhere or Ed Lee other than a staffer if were I eligible continuously, because I never would have given up the job. I would have worked at making sure that I got myself elected, got myself acceptable to 50 plus one of the voters. I was never interested in everybody.
Well, I think we've fulfilled our obligation for local and state politics now, so we can get to the fun part a little bit and talk about what's happening on a national basis. You've covered a good deal of ground in your comments, but let me ask you a few questions that have come from the audience, mostly about Donald Trump again, which seems to be what we've become addicted to, but some also about Hillary and Bernie and others. But let me start with Mr. Trump. There are some that say that he's an ignorant man, but he's not a stupid man. Ignorant of facts, but not stupid in the way to use media and public relations and marketing. Is he really was it really the press and television that made him the candidate, or did he do it himself?
I think he's a very smart man. He utilizes every marketing avenue and every marketing technique that exists. The press has never seen a candidate for national office willing, literally, every day of his life to meet, greet, be interviewed by, hang with, period. But that's Trump. And he was doing that from his position as a celebrity. I don't think he started out to be the nominee. I think he started out to re-enhance himself in the world of entertainment. And I think he stumbled into a measurement against 16 pros or semi-pros, and in that process he realized that they were all minor leaguers for communicating purposes, and he took full advantage of it. He would have been better prepared if he had been originally serious about his candidacy for the presidency. And so now I fear that he may, since I believe he is smart, I believe that he will, and I fear that he will turn his skill set to trying to bridge that gap. I don't think he'll be able to do it quick enough, frankly, because I think he is going to want to live with his daily television dominance. No one running for any office has gotten as much free national, international media as Trump. He's probably averaged 30% of every broadcast since the first day he announced. And any day you ignore him, he's on top of you through Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. He knows every use of every method by which to get attention. And many of the people in the world of journalism, and then particularly in the political side of journalism, are so not interested in going out and trying to find a story. They are more comfortable having a story delivered to them. He knows that, and he delivers the story. And the more outrageous he makes it, the more airtime they give him. And they are absolutely unaware that he is dealing with public, a public, previously non-participants in many cases, and they've always wanted to have somebody who sounded like them. And he is sounding like them. He got away with saying, you know, I love the uneducated. I mean, and all he got was every guy that had a tattoo suddenly embraced him. And that's how Trump works it. And believe me, he could be formidable. However, there is a column, I think, yesterday in the New York Times. This economist, one of the top economists in the world, wrote this column. And it is the most telling appraisal of the inadequacies of Trump that's been done by anybody. And to the extent that the news media starts holding Trump as accountable as they hold Hillary, as accountable as they held Jed, as accountable as they poor Ben, as they held them all accountable. They don't bother to hold Trump accountable. They let him get away with everything. Only my friend that I appear with occasionally on Hardball nailed him during the course of the primary. Only guy that nailed him, Chris Matthews, nailed him on that one set. But you realize that died down so quick, he got right past that and went on, and nobody else. George Stephanopoulos tried last Sunday over and over and over again to get his attention, and he could not. And so the press needs to assume the responsibility for helping to undo the damage they've done on the body politic in America by enhancing the opportunity for Trump to be persuasive.
Thank you. For those of you who are part of our radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California's radio program. Our guest is Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco and a national political commentator. I'm Joseph Fink, your moderator. Willie, one of the tactics that appears that Trump is using is the appeal to the class of individuals who have lost their positions because of manufacturing, and that the Rust Belt states will be fair ground for him, possibly where he'll be successful in places that are traditionally Democratic places like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan. Do you think he's going to be successful in doing that?
Well, you got to know, Joseph, in almost every presidential election, the Republican Party gets 45% of the vote. The Democratic Party gets 45% of the vote, guaranteed. The rest of the vote is where the decision is finally made. And in this case, I think Trump has set it up so that if the Democrats do it right, that component that's left out there for decision purposes will be rooted in serious issues about inequality among all of us, serious issues about a legitimate quality healthcare delivery system. Trump is so far away on that that it's frightening. And the whole question about what happens in the environmental world, he doesn't even speak to. I think that's going to be the grounds. And I think we cannot, as Democrats, allow ourselves to be dragged into arguing with him about building a wall. You know, matter of fact, if he wins, that wall is going to be paid for by Mexico to keep us out. And so we ought not to get involved in that. And he's totally and completely out to lunch when he talks about or mass discrimination against somebody on the basis of religion, or all of those things will inure to his detriment. We just have to make sure we are interested enough in reassuring people that the nationalistic attitude that he's trying to exploit should not be rooted in isolationism, which is where he's kind of headed when he talks about all those things. He has no idea and he has no care about what he says as it relates to trade. Here's a guy that, all three of his wives are immigrants. And what does he think? No woman in America can perform the task? And so his level of inconsistency is frightening. And so I think that dragging him into that discussion, as somewhat was done in the New York Times article, will expose him. But the press has got to follow dramatically delivering the message. And he can't talk to enough tattoo people to overcome that.
One of the ways he's been very successful during the primary season has been by insulting his opponents, whomever they might be. He's already started that with Hillary Clinton purely by talking about Bill Clinton and his infidelities, something that happened about 25 years ago. Do you think that's going to carry water? Do you think it's going to be a successful tactic on his move toward the presidency?
Only if she responds to it. If she ignores it, it will not have legs, period. Everybody knows, I mean, who doesn't know what Bill Clinton was about and is probably still about? And nobody really cares, frankly. That's not what we don't, that's not part of how we judge you anymore in America. And Trump cannot stand up as the paragon of family virtues. Clearly, he just doesn't have it. It doesn't work. And if she gets into a contest with him, defending Bill Clinton, she'll be wasting her time and her energy. And she has so far ignored his comments about Bill Clinton. And he has tried, and it is not, I don't think, reaching with, 70% of the women are offended by Trump. And I believe that the attack on Bill Clinton and trying to say that somehow Hillary enabled Bill Clinton to do that. I've never heard that argument. I don't understand the logic of it. How did she, what is she? She's turned into a madam and I'm making the arrangements for his entertainment. That's got to be what he means when he says that she's the person who's doing it. And I don't think the public will buy that. And I think he will begin to sound shrill in his own right if he keeps saying it. And besides that, there are going to be enough surrogates who will attack him. I'd love to hear him get into an exchange with President Clinton, because I suspect that if I know Bill Clinton, he's got the information on Trump. And I think he will expose Trump like the world exposed Gary Hart. You remember when Gary Hart said, if you think I'm fooling around, follow me?
And they did.
I have never invited anybody to follow me.
Donald Trump has the highest negatives of anyone ever running for the presidency, but Hillary Clinton also has very high negatives. Those of us who have been involved or know her to a degree have difficulty understanding that. Why does that happen? Why are her negatives so high with the national, with people throughout the nation?
I suspect, one, she's a powerful woman. That's number one. Number two, she does not act like a woman. She acts like a power broker in every aspect of what she does. She's like one of the boys. Just watch how she destroyed the entire Republican caucus operation on the Benghazi hearings. She went 11 hours, and she was the only one that didn't have to go to the restroom during any of that time period. And that's the way she is, and that pisses off a lot of people. And believe me, I think that's generated. And she doesn't suffer fools lightly. She's not into humor. She's not into charm. She's into none of the above. But I'm telling you, she can quickly fix that if she would just at all times treat us like she's talking to her grandkid.
Okay. If you were advising her, would you advise her to release the transcripts of the speeches that she gave to various Wall Street firms?
Absolutely. There's nothing in those speeches that would be inconsistent with good judgment for Hillary. She would be discussing how you run business, how she runs business. She would be discussing and talking about everything that she's done. The issue, however, will be the selection of snippets by hostile press people and pushing her into where she would have to defend each of those little snippets. That you don't ever want to do. You do not want to get where your quote becomes the issue rather than the content of your performance. And taking excerpts from your speeches, which was always my problem, you really do have a child. And that's why she has not released them, period. And believe me, I think she's playing it so that you keep asking for it, and if she unloads it and there's nothing there, you're going to be in trouble. You notice it's not Trump screaming for her speeches, period, because there's nothing in her speeches would be inconsistent with his business practices, etc. And you notice also that Trump hasn't said a word about his tax returns, because it will be proven, I think, in his tax return that he's overstating his net worth by light years. I suspect that his reasons for saying that we ought to renegotiate America's debt is because I think he's lived most of his life renegotiating his debt and taking advantage of that opportunity. And he doesn't understand you can't do that in the U.S. government. The U.S. government's full faith and credit for the dollar bill literally is a standard for the whole world. The whole world lives off of our currency stability. And believe me, we honor. You buy an American, you buy a U.S. government-generated asset, a bond, you really do know that you're going to get your money. It's going to be there, ultimately. Trump is talking about taking a look at that and said, okay, well, you know, you bought it for a dollar, we'll give you 50 cents and you give it back. That ain't the way it works. And Trump's life is that way. And if he had to display his tax returns, I think if he has any, he would demonstrate that. And so I don't think that that's going to ultimately be a liability. And because I think that it's too easy to know that she clearly hasn't said anything that anybody is going out and reinvested in the stock market in.
For a while, it looked as if we were going to have a contested Republican convention, but that's not happening now, and he's going to become the nominee of the party. What, in your view, is going to happen to the Republican Party?
The Republican Party is ultimately going to all line up behind Trump. He's absolutely right. They have no other place to go. They have tried every avenue that they can. They have tried every insult that they can. They have described him worse than any Democrat has ever described him. And invariably, he still has more cachet among Republicans than any other Republican. And they're all going to fall in line, ultimately. But hopefully, they will do it with less enthusiasm and make it better for Hillary to be able to win it. I'm just sorry that Cruz didn't succeed in keeping the fight going. I love the fight between Cruz and Trump. It made for great theater, and it made for great actions among the Republicans, and literally it had forced what used to be components of the Republican Party. They don't know what they're doing now. You got the libertarian component of the Republican Party. You've got the Tea Part of the Republican that no longer identifies themselves as the Tea Part. You got the true conservatives. You got the Rockefeller type conservatives that are trying to explain themselves. I want them to keep trying to explain themselves all the way through November.
One of the, you mentioned Ted Cruz, and one of the folks in the audience has stated that Ted Cruz oozes insincerity, but does that mean he'll be Trump's running mate?
I don't think Trump wants Cruz's vote. I think he grew to dislike Cruz. I don't think he disliked Lil Marco. But I think he disliked Lion Ted. And Cruz's group did what they did in the misrepresentation against Ben Carson early on, I think that really stamped Cruz as the guy Trump would always want to stomp on. And believe me, he did that. And I think it became even worse when Cruz's people raised a photograph of Trump's current wife, not like in First Lady attire. And Trump was really funny about that. Trump responded, typical Trump. He took a great photograph of his wife and a photograph of Cruz's wife and says, now, which would you prefer as First Lady? So he's really insulted things beyond belief. He won't accept Trump. He won't accept Cruz, no matter what. And I would guess that among those who were, he would never take Fiorina. He probably wouldn't touch that senator that's so insulting, Leslie Graham. He wouldn't accept him. I would guess that he's going to look around and come up with a woman, and it'll be a woman governor or a woman U.S. senator on the Republican side. One of them had already said she'd jump at the chance to run with him, and I think he will do that because I think he is smart enough to know that whomever he selects, he's going to need somebody that knows something about government.
Sarah Palin's available.
Well, you know, I think he used Sarah for the one-night stand that he needed at that moment. I'm telling you, he's really smart. And you notice, you haven't seen her hanging out with him since that first little blush.
Let's talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders. I mean, he has attracted thousands and thousands of people and raised millions and millions of dollars without traditionally going to the large donors. Why do you think he's become such a popular person among young people? Is it just because young people are naive, or is it because of the fact that he really has something going for him?
No, all the things that he says. When he says education in this country should be free for everybody, not just poverty-stricken people. It should be free for everybody, and it should be education from nursery school or even child care through graduate school. And we ought to pick up the tab for that. He says what Obama did in health care was not enough. We really ought to have a modification and an enhancement of Obama's system. He doesn't say how he can do it. He just tells you everything that he thinks needs to be done. And he talks glowingly about how the earning capacity in America has not kept pace with the growth in the economy of this country produced by the workers, and that they deserve a better piece of the action. And then he cites one or two entities that are actually trying to do that, to encourage continuation of work and a higher performance. And so he's saying all the things that need to be said and need to be considered. He's just not a producer. He's been in the U.S. Senate for 24, 26 years.
In Congress.
And there is absolutely nothing that he's ever achieved in the U.S. Senate. He can't even point to a Mother's Day resolution. But that doesn't count when it comes to, with all of these potential voters, when it comes to raising the appropriate issues. And I'm telling you, Hillary Clinton should be mindful of those things, and she should, day she's sworn in, she should start, in some cases, pursuing some of those ideal things to improve the quality of life for all the people. And Bernie should continue his advocacy, but only in Vermont.
Unfortunately, we've reached that time in our program where there's just enough time for one last question. You mentioned the fact that while serving in as mayor of San Francisco, you were kind of egomaniacal kind of point of view. Who is the who has the largest ego in San Francisco politics now?
Most of them are very small.
Most of them are very...
In every way.
Small in every way. Yeah. All right, I think we'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Brother Jones.
All right, I have to close the program. I have to close the program. Okay.
Thank you for your comment.
Our thanks to Willie Brown, and our thanks to our audience. The Commonwealth Club program is closed.